Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist, you know, where we bring creativity and transformation under one roof, and we do it when we talk about business. And this can be your business, the business you work in, the business you'd like to start, the business that is doing more than you ever imagined, and you have good problems. And then for some of you, well, your business may not be doing what you want it to do. And so every Thursday, we come to you from 7 until 8, and we talk about expertise or different perspectives of running a business, finance, leadership, accounting, project management. We've had entrepreneurs come on. And tonight, well, it will be no different. We have guests. We have very special guests. I think you will find them intriguing. And before we introduce the guests, you know I never take this journey alone. I have to always introduce my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
So hi, everyone. It's Lori Miller from LGC Interior Design. I have to say I'm a little under the weather, so you'll have to bear with my crazy voice. But I'm super excited to be here yet again, and I will let you know that we are not going to be hosting our podcast next week due to the Thanksgiving holiday, but we'll be back and live on air. I think it's December 2nd, so look forward to us the following Thursday. Tonight's guests are two very special ladies, and let's talk about entrepreneurs in a whole nother avenue. So I was lucky enough to meet them on my High Point trip. And they do so much. They're interior architecture students. And we're going to let Jen and Bianca tell you a little bit about themselves. But they have done more in their lifetimes as students than I think most of us have done in our lifetimes as adult entrepreneurs. So entrepreneurs in their own right, let's hear how they juggle work, how they juggle school, how they juggle finances, how they juggle being presidents of different organizations and major organizations, I might say, how they host their own TV show, and there's a whole host of other accolades. So Jen and Bianca, please introduce yourselves, and you can decide amongst yourselves who goes first.
Hello. We are so excited to be here. This is Jen speaking. I'm a fourth-year interior architecture major at Marywood University, which is located in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and I am minoring in psychology, and my peer Bianca is right here with me.
I'm Bianca, and I'm a third-year interior architect major, also at Marywood University in Scranton. I started as a regular architecture major for the first 2 years of school, and then about halfway through my second year, I switched over to interior architecture, and we've been loving it ever since.
She belongs. This is where she belongs.
And amazing at it.
I'd agree. Definitely.
Yeah. So do you want to start with all of your organizations? Let's start with your TV show.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so just to tell you a little bit about it, Bianca and I are hosts on a show called A Student's Perspective. Our teacher, Professor Stephen, is awesome and has provided us with this opportunity to basically interview design entrepreneurs within the industry. And we've interviewed so many different people, whether it be an interior designer or I've interviewed Madame Architect who does a blog. So really any type of avenue within the design industry we kind of reach and seek to be able to speak to. And it's a really awesome opportunity to be able to do that. And Lori, you were one of our interviews. You were Bianca's first interview, and I would say she did very well. We were so excited to be able to meet you, and now, of course, have the roles reversed.
Yeah, wow. we're definitely beyond grateful for that.
Oh, my God, it was so amazing to meet you. But it wasn't just me. I mean, you've interviewed some pretty impressive people. You had, I think, a graphic designer from Panera Bread.
Yep. Yeah, that was, I believe, season 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've had some other, like, really impressive guests. So kudos to you.
Thank you. I think we definitely – Stephen Garrison deserves a lot of the credit for that. He has connections, and he's a huge reason we were able to even go to High Point Market. I don't think a lot of people
here at Marywood or really around the area understand how great of an opportunity High Point is. So it kind of did blossom at a High Point market. Is he ended up kind of getting the torch handed off to him with the student's perspective and University Hall. So yeah, he was able to connect with a lot of people down there and then connect students with all of them. So it's kind of been a ongoing path and it's been growing and we're learning as each season passes kind of quality of it. And of course we had to face COVID, so we went virtual with our interviews. So yeah, right. It entails a lot of things.
Yeah, we definitely are making it work, especially opportunities like High Point. We had so many interviews, very literally running across the street,
yes,
from interview to interview. But we got to meet so many different designers. We were offered, somebody was offered an internship.
Yes.
So it's a really exciting experience and all owed to Stephen for the thanks of that.
Yes,
he is the behind the scenes man of it all.
So Ted says he would like Stephen on the show as well. So if you can conjure that up.
Absolutely.
I'm sure he would love to. He has quite the interesting background, and he lives here in Scranton. So I'm sure he would love to talk to you guys a little bit about it.
Perfect. Ted, we'll get him on the schedule for you. Now, you're also president of the IIDA?
Yes, yeah. So that's for International Interior Design Association. So, of course, there's IIDA, which is the whole organization as itself. But our IIDA club is basically a sub-branch here at Marywood. And you could either become a member in the actual IIDA organization, or you could just kind of join our club and come to the meetings, come to events we hold. We actually are having someone from IIDA, Caitlin. She's going to come tomorrow and speak a little bit about what IIDA has to offer and kind of the benefits behind it. But it has been kind of a slowed down club here at Marywood. So my co-president Megan and I, we wanted to get it back up and running and have everyone understand that IIDA is awesome and that interior architecture is not just interior design, and we want people to totally get involved with it. So we're super excited to kind of get it to blossom again, because again, COVID was such a huge thing and really slowed every club down here at Marywood. So yeah, we're getting the footing back, but I mean, I'm so excited to be president of that club, and we have so many people willing to kind of put a hand forward and come to meetings and go to the events we hold. So it's been awesome so far.
Yeah, I'm not in an executive position on the board, but I am a part of it, and it has already opened up so many opportunities just with, I guess, like seeing how many different avenues there are in our major. I think that sometimes like going into it, you think, okay, like I'm going to be working in a firm with one specific thing, but that's not really the entirety of it. There's so much more. And clubs like this kind of opens up different avenues so that we can explore a little bit and meet new people and connect. And it's really awesome.
And gain perspective,
yeah,
about the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And for our listeners who don't know, can you, because we don't have just designers or architects. We have like everybody, whether they're opening a restaurant or, you know, they're in marketing or they're, you know, whatever they may do. So could you tell them what the IIDA is?
The International Interior Design Association.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So
that's basically just, as Bianca was explaining, just this great avenue where a lot of people work with interior designers. I think a lot of connections are brought about. Of course, they support students with us being memberships within this organization. I mean, there's the magazines that you get monthly, so that's always a nice little perk, kind of like Architectural Digest. So I feel like it's kind of a typical design organization, and of course it has its personal perks. So yeah, just as a small explanation of what it is.
Awesome. And doing what you do, what have you learned about running a business?
Running a business.
Oh.
Definitely time management,
I'd say,
because I think there's little things that you have to do task-wise to get done for whether it be a club, I guess, as being a business, not necessarily that either of us have that, but running a club and being involved in it, there's little tasks that you have to do to keep it running, and I think that definitely just, you know, reads as the same as running a business. You have all these little things to do and you can't really let anything slip through the cracks, because of course that's when you lose
the structure of the club or whatever it may be that you are holding in place. So yeah, I would definitely say time management is a huge thing because you need to make sure you're accomplishing everything that needs to get accomplished and don't let anybody be unheard. We're trying to make sure that everybody's voice is heard and that everyone in the club knows that we are ready to help them, whether it be with the studio project or anything personal going on in their lives. So I think just, you know, not just being the leader of it, but also being a friend with it. So I think that's something that's been huge with it.
Yeah, I definitely think that a huge part of even different, you can run it parallel to different avenues of your life and just seeing that it's a group effort. And you can decide to take on as much help as you'd like or do it on your own. But that extra help, whether it's in conversation and just using those conversations with what you're doing, I feel like that is such just those connections. And then it's such a great part of business that we don't even own yet. But but we're learning how to, for sure. And I think that team effort is a really big part of it.
So where do you see yourself, let's say 5 years from now? What do you want to be doing?
So 5 years from now, I think that, so I have been, market opened up a lot of opportunities and it really brought out a lot of my design aspect and like a little bit more creativity so that I wasn't just logic based because I'm a very logical person. But I think it just showed me that, I don't know, like there's so many opportunities including like textiles that I would have never thought of. So I could dive a little bit deeper into that or maybe not necessarily like a definitive space yet, especially because I'm only in my third year, but I would love to be working for a firm, but in a specific, I guess, unit within that firm that incorporates the design aspects a little bit less of the logic aspects, because I think that the design aspects and the creativity of it is definitely where I belong. Even as a kid, like I kind of had that idea with, I started in high school at a vocational tech school. So I started in fashion and I just knew that I needed to be in design in one way or another. So architecture was like the perfect spot of the balance of like creativity and then a little bit of logic and a little bit of kind of problem solving. So I think that's the most fun part.
That was a really good answer. Personally, I hope for 2 years from now to be graduated from a master's program. I'm not entirely sure where I want to go just yet, but I know in the future I want to teach, and basically getting your master's in interior architecture, that's kind of the big perk that goes along with it. Other than that, it's kind of just a degree of master's. So I don't necessarily want to be teaching in 5 years, but I hope 5 years from now I'm in an interesting city, and whether it be at a firm learning something totally new or maybe I'm creating furniture. I'm very into DIY, so I think I'd love to be creating and designing and doing all those sorts of aspects. But I think I totally agree. High Point Market totally opened my eyes to all the different things you can do with design. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, creating a house or designing a space. It can be down to the nitty-gritty of lighting and making wallpaper and tiles. So there's so many things on it. So I think I'm just excited to kind of hop from opportunity to opportunity, because I tend to find myself excited about like everything. So
I know. Yeah, I just think everything there was just, everything stood out in a different way. And it just shines light on the fact that the design industry is never ending, always growing, and there's always opportunity to actually look for it.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So true. And just when you think you have it figured out, you don't.
Oh, yeah. Oh, like, yeah. We were like, oh, yeah, we're going to be architects. We're going to be working like traditionally in firms. Nope, not at all.
That is not how it works. Okay.
Gives you very different changes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So,
go ahead,
Ted.
Go ahead, please. Finish.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I'd like to take a few steps back, and I'd like to understand why you chose the majors that you've chosen.
That's a good question. I can start with that if you'd like. So I, in high school, after switching from the fashion high school to a regular closer high school, I was experimenting a little bit with environmental studies. So I got
pretty far into classes with that. My school offered a lot of opportunities for that. I was really lucky. And one of our projects was to design a city that was a carbon sink. And my sector that I had to focus on was housing. So there was treatment situations, there was infrastructure, there was transportation, and then we were lucky enough to get housing, which was the coolest one in my opinion. And we had to make a house that was it had very little carbon emissions. It was such an interesting project, and I just fell in love with it. I'm not much of an avid researcher, but I fell in love with it and I couldn't stop researching it. It became something I did on my free time. It wasn't just a project anymore. It was something that I really fell in love with, and I was okay, this is where I belong. Sustainability in architecture, whatever way that can be. For me, it was super sporadic. I hadn't realized what I even wanted to be until my senior year of high school. I was bouncing all over the place. If you asked me my junior year what I wanted to be, I would have been telling you nurse. I was in totally different fields of wherever I could have gone, but I had started to take art classes my senior year of high school, and I realized that I was kind of good at it, and I was really happy to sit down and paint or play with mixed media, whatever it was, but I loved the creativeness behind it. But I also knew that whatever I did do as my professional job, I wanted to be impacting the people around me in a positive way. So I kind of took my love for art and that creative side of me and kind of went down different avenues to see what potential jobs I could look into and what I could major in. And I kind of just fell upon interior design and interior architecture. Originally, I had hoped to double major in architecture and interior design, which has then led me to here, with interior architecture being the perfect happy middle between the two. So, yeah, I realized that design is all around you, and I could totally impact the people around me with what I create in the future.
Okay. So you're both really setting up my next question.
Oh, perfect.
Which is... All right, you don't even realize you set it up perfectly. I want to ask about the future. So, and maybe that's the third question. Let's talk about design and sustainability today. What are your perspectives or about what you see in the world of design when you go through buildings and homes? And I know that's a big question, and it's kind of general, but I really would like to know your thoughts about what you see today.
Well, I think we could give a lot of credit to just our curriculum here at
Marywood.
Coming here, they basically just rewire the way you think. You have to really go back a lot of steps and, start from the beginning and understand that criticism is a good thing, that you're going to fail, you're going to keep, making mistakes, but that's a good thing because you learn from it. But something that one of our professors said was that good design goes unnoticed, but bad design is always, always sticking out like a sore thumb. So, so now that we've gone through a couple years here, me almost being done and Bianca also almost being done, just a little bit more to go. I think just that as you go through the buildings or spaces, whether it be outside or inside, that just the experience of it is so, so important. So I find myself paying attention to, just the interaction between planes and masses and, just the connection between the structure of it, but also how a space makes you feel. So whether it be the colors in the room or whether it be super disorganized clutter, or maybe it's organized clutter, so it's working for the space. So I think it's just really made me recognize the tiny, tiny details in a room. And again, just if there is something sticking out, like a jagged corner that just leaves dead space.
Yeah.
Why did they do that?
Yeah.
So I think, just the tiny little details has come very apparently clear.
Yeah. And what Jen said about how those good designs go unnoticed. We're lucky enough to be in a building right now, our architecture building. It's a beautiful building, and environmentally, it's an amazing and it's almost breathtaking when you really think of the facts of it. You can't actually see it until somebody spells it out for you, but it's a refurbished gym,
like a gymnasium from our school before we upgraded a little bit. And so now we have a lot of students that are sitting in the pool area, and that's their desk space that they remodeled. And then back towards the basketball courts is where I sit with my class. So it's really interesting that you get to see the opportunities from an environmental perspective, that you can refurbish things. You don't have to take everything down and then restart from scratch. There's so many different things you can learn from that. And then understanding our build of our school. I mean, we even use like gray water for like toiletries instead of like fresh water. It's just really amazing the opportunities that our school has taken environmentally to set up this building. So it's like Jen said, it's just, you start to pick apart the space itself and see it and experience it. And then you start to actually understand the design perspective and like why they made those decisions. So, yeah.
And we were definitely drilled into our heads that every decision you make, you need to have a reason why. You can't just design to design. You have to back it with the decision and research, whatever it may be, but there has to be a reason why you make that decision. And then in the long run, it ends up all coming together beautifully, especially, yeah, like this building that we're sitting in now.
So interesting. And just one second, if anyone would like to call in and ask Jen or Bianca questions, especially if you are in the design world or if you're in college or you're just graduating and you'd like to engage them, the phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. So I'm not even getting to my other question yet. This is a follow-up. So
okay.
When you look at older buildings, you know, perhaps made in the 1940s or 70s, how do you, you know, I just heard you say there has to be a reason behind you, instead of design just for the sake of design, and there needs to be some research behind it. And, you know, I was listening to you say, well, you know, why'd they put that there and why is that corner there? And so when you look at older buildings, what are your thoughts about some of the older buildings?
I love looking at older buildings because you could almost just visualize being back in that time. Actually, Scranton is pretty interesting to be living in. I have an apartment here in Scranton, and in my room, there's an old, like, oil lantern, like the way they used to turn those on, you know, use that as their light. But now I use it to, like,
keep
my coat on it. Yeah. So it's really interesting because you walk through these spaces. And one major thing I think I've seen is that open floor layouts was not a thing.
Yeah.
They just didn't think about the fact that a room can feel so cramped just by putting a wall in between the dining room and the living room, whatever the spatial relation could be. So I think just in a bigger gesture of the way that they set up their spaces, you can see that they weren't, I don't know, maybe just design has come a long way since then, but you can see that it was just kind of put together, in my opinion. I think there's absolutely beautiful architecture and interior architecture from the past as well, but I think there has been a shift of perspective from then until now. So walking through older buildings, it's really exciting to see because I feel like the history is just spilling out of the walls. So it's nice to kind of see that. And we had gone to that library in North Carolina, and that was, I can't remember the name of the library, so I apologize for that, but it was beautiful. They had this massive fireplace. It was beautiful interior with the stone on the walls. Oh, it was so nice. So just that alone, the librarian was awesome and gave us a little tour of this library. And she was explaining the old couple that used to live there and basically left this business, this library, off to the next generation because they felt like it was, you know, impacting their community and this, that, and the other thing. But the design of these old spaces is just, yeah, I just love the history that kind of just screams at you as you go through it.
Yeah, I think every time I see an older building and I actually can wholeheartedly experience it, like it's called the Bienenstock
Library.
I couldn't think of the word and then it hit me. The Bienenstock Library, if you ever want to look it up, it's beautiful. And every time I look and experience the space, you think of all the opportunity that's there to further it even more if you know, you want to refurbish it so that it can still stand. Like, this structure was stunning, and they refurbished it so beautifully. So just being able to see, we have a lot of, there's a lot of new buildings on our campus, but there's a lot of older ones as well. And experiencing those, it's like, okay, now how can we adjust this just enough so that it's got those environmental aspects of it? And how can we maybe change the space a little bit so that it's an open floor plan, but it still feels like that old, unique building full of history? Because Scranton is so full of history. And the opportunity to, I guess, express that through structures and design, interior and exterior, is everywhere here.
Yeah, that's really true, actually. One of our main buildings holds, I think, the state's biggest rotunda in the state. It's beautiful. It is magnificent. You walk in, and, of course, you could sing in there, mm-hmm. and it echoes. We are a liberal arts school, so you can catch a few people in there here and there. But even so, they took the liberty to, you know, get rid of some of the older windows and implement new ones to gain that more natural light. But they kept that old layout of the classrooms, and that rotunda is kind of a central focus mm-hmm. here. But, yeah, it is really nice to see just the changing of some of the details, but not forgetting what the identity of what it used
right.
to be. You kind of you have to keep that there and not let that go, but also, adapt to what is more useful for today. Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. And what I'm going to say is not exactly what you're saying, but I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I remember downtown there were these buildings that were old. I don't know if they were built in the 20s or 30s, but they were, or even before that, they were very old. So, you know, the very intricate detail in, you know, in the face of the building, the frames, the structures around the window, and, you know, just lots of detail. And what they did is, instead of just completely demolishing 100% of the building, they demolished the insides, the entire mm-hmm. guts, like literally, and they allowed the face to still stand. And then they just built a building attached to the face. So you had inside, this would have been in the 90s, inside you had a completely, you know, new building for the 90s, except on the outside you still had this very, very old, ornate architecture that you just didn't see in the new building. So I know that's not the same as refurbishing, but there was this intent to keep that old style in downtown D.C. for some of the buildings.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because honestly, mm-hmm. the facade of a building is extremely important. It's the grand entrance. It's kind of what piques your
right.
curiosity of entering it or not. That's actually a really good point, because in the different eras of design, the amount of ornamental design that goes into the facade,
oh my
or
gosh.
Just the minor details, even on the inside, of course, but like the Gothic period, like you would see the tiniest
right.
little engravements in the concrete on the building, or Victorian style, just... Yeah, that's so true, because I think the more modern design is a lot more simplistic.
Yeah.
But if you look back to, like, the Baroque era, the Art Deco, which is extremely,
extravagant.
Yeah, so that's a really good point. I am glad that you brought that up, because that's pretty major within the history of what is in design.
Yeah, I think that's what's most exciting about our major as well, because when you go to D.C. and you're walking down those streets, you feel that. Like you, in the same way that you feel it in so many different historic spaces, but like what's there and what's standing, it's amazing that we don't have to actually take that down to
right.
change the inside around a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I'm so excited about our major, and that's kind of why I actually switched from architecture to interior architecture, so that we could learn how to rearrange those spaces without getting rid of that history and without altering the street side view, which is you think about Jane Jacobs and how she really kept the city standing.
That's
in New
so
York.
True.
Yeah. So you just consider the different forms that I guess you can just completely rearrange a space as many times as you'd like, and the exterior can still hold just as much history as it did the day it was built.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right. So then that does get me to my second question, which is, like your generation has a very different perspective when it comes to sustainability, how employees are treated, sourcing, you know, where mm-hmm. where the materials come, is it local, is it, you know, offshore? So where do you see the whole interior design and architecture, where do you see it going in the future? I heard you talk about refurbishing a gym as opposed to just tearing it down and building a new one. Like, is that one aspect of the future, or is the future something very different than, and I'm asking from your perspective. That's why I asked what you thought of old architecture. Now I'm asking you about the future, and I get your appreciation for, you know, the older periods and how intricate the designs were. But, you know, where do you all see the future of architecture going? And, like, and give me your wild imagination, the stuff that maybe you don't even discuss with your professor yet, and because the older generation may not see it. So I'm giving you carte blanche to run down the yellow brick road.
Awesome. Thank you. I mean, yeah, I think that that's awesome in that history within the architecture. So personally, I feel like the future can hold. A lot of people are ready to just make new things and forget the past and just keep on moving forward. And I think the society we live in is just always in a rush and wants to see new things and better things, because everything can keep improving. But it's about forgetting what is there. So again, mentioning Scranton, we have so many rundown buildings and what once used to be beautiful buildings. Like we have the lace factory here. We have once was a silk mill. There are just so many beautiful buildings that people are just letting get run down. But I feel like the future can be, again, refurbishing and adaptive reuse and creating these things to be into their own new identity, whether it be, I mean, my personal decision would, of course, be to appreciate what once was there. I think, and now that you said the kind of biggest imaginative thing I could think of, I think social justice topics is important. I think homelessness is something I feel really strongly about. I think that designers have a huge part that they can play in that, whether it be creating shelters that then, you know, give these homeless people a job at that shelter to oversee it. Just, I think every single thing can impact the next. So I think and hope that the future of design with its, you know, hand in hand with the history of architecture, I hope to see that it doesn't, you know, get plowed over. I hope, keeping sustainability in mind, that these beautiful structures are just regrouped and put together to be beautiful again, but not only last a couple of years, or of course not a couple of years. I would hope that it would last longer than a couple of years, but years and years down the line to still be up and running. And then whether or not that starts to deteriorate, someone comes in again and just keeps it going. Because what's the point of making a beautiful building if it's going to be gone in 100 years?
Right.
Like, I think that these designers that we have in our past didn't design just to be forgotten. They designed because they feel passionate about it. And I think we would both agree that that's how we feel, and that when we're long and gone, that our designs are still impacting people and are still here doing things on that day. So I hope to see that it's just a constant recycling effect, and that things that are considered old can also be considered modern. And Laura, you actually mentioned carving out a piece of a carpet that was super important to one of your clients, and then just creating it as a picture frame and a piece of a gallery work on their wall. So something like that can be a tiny little detail, but still be so impactful and resonate on what this space used to be. So whether it be little gestures or carving out the entire inside of a building, I think that hopefully just that constant recycling effect occurs.
Yeah, I definitely think that our future, even like the upcoming future, is so exciting and hopeful, especially from an environmental perspective, from an ethical perspective even, because we've been, I guess, like welcomed into this whole new world of knowledge that is kind of surfacing now more than ever. And we have the opportunity to take a space and actually incorporate that feeling and that knowledge into that space. So I think that from an upcoming new designer's perspective, it's so hopeful and so exciting just to see what you can actually do and with a space to make people feel and understand the way that you intended for that space to be based off of all of this new knowledge, all of the environmental aspects of it. And like with like even with our projects now that we're doing, we have to consider, you know, where are these things coming from? Is it a local situation where we're bringing things in close, or is it, do we have to import them from somewhere further away? And what's our footprint on all of those decisions that we're making? So it's a lot to think about, but I think that our few years recently has been doing a great job with it.
Yes, I agree. Because we keep reminding ourselves that it's important to think about each of these things,
right.
That it's not, it shouldn't just be buried underground, that you, if you make all of these decisions, and again, how I mentioned previously, every decision you make needs to matter, and that's why each tiny decision adds up to being such a successful piece of work, because maybe that's what creates it to be more sustainable and long-lasting.
Absolutely.
Interesting. I met a woman from Singapore. I met her in New York City. And she was visiting the U.S. for the first time. And she said she was really surprised and disappointed because in Singapore, they didn't have homeless people. And she was just, you know, blown away to see the amount of homeless people that existed in New York.
Mm-hmm.
She said there, if you were homeless, like, they would just build a house for you. Like, they just
didn't.
And Singapore is
that's amazing.
The cleanest city. The cleanest place in the world. This is a little off topic. She said, but they have people who are paid to stand around, and if you throw a piece of paper on the ground, you get a ticket. So
I've heard of that. That's awesome. That's what keeps the world, you know, a better place.
Yeah. I think our generation is very excited to take what other people are doing well and use that and take advantage of that knowledge and not have to learn for ourselves, but learn from their experience and bring it into our own experience.
Yeah. And I think there's this stigma around homeless people that, you know, there's trash on the street and it's their fault. But where are the public trash cans?
Right.
Like, where are the public restrooms so they're not, you know, urinating on the sidewalk? But it's just the stigma in that, you know, they have this stereotype that they're in very bad environments all the time. But half of them are veterans. And to be honest, that's just outrageous. That's insane. So I think the fact that there's people building houses for homeless people is amazing, because then you still know that, you know, the people around you are still looking out for you. But that's the thing about, I think, unfortunately, where we are at, is that it's like a constant competition almost, that you need to be, well, I have to get to my job, so I can't stop and give you the donut I have in my bag. But it's just the little things matter, and I think the fact that that's happening in Singapore, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah.
And I wish a lot of people living here get that culture shock, because maybe, you know, one person adds up to the next person, and hopefully then can lead to a bigger impact here in the States. Because being in New York kind of makes me sad when I see the amount of people sitting on the streets, and whether they're asking for money or food, the least you can do is, I don't know, give them a cookie.
Anything. Anything is better than nothing.
Well, you know, and I asked her, a strange question. I said, well, what if you drop paper in? The person, the ticket writer, says, hey, come here, and you start running. She said, well, you better run. You better be a fast runner, because they're going to chase you.
Oh, my gosh.
See, but that's great, because then it's just going to lead people to not litter. And
right.
It's just such a simple thing that there's these little things that are going on that aren't spoken enough about, or maybe, I mean, I could say I don't like when people litter, but that's not going to tell the next person not to litter. But having it in place that you're actually going to get, you know, if you're going to be responsible for it, that's when it really starts to matter.
We have to actually make it happen. Yeah.
Right. Well, and just for the record, I don't know if you remember, Lori, I think it was in the 90s, New York City started putting these rather somewhat large portable restrooms, like they just put them in certain places and on the sidewalk. And they took them down because there were homeless people sleeping in them. Of course, people used them for the intended purpose, but there were also people using them to have sex in them. So they said, that's enough.
Yeah.
And they just took them down. So
I think
maybe that says more about our culture and a society.
I'd agree. And I think there's a disconnect with that because – you know, they'll see that it's not working out the way they intended it to, and then they just shut the whole operation down. But it's like, why don't you look at that and kind of see what solution there is to that issue? So maybe there are people, you know, crowding the bathroom that they really shouldn't be doing whatever scandalous things are going on, or, you know, illegal things. But that's where I think, again, how I mentioned, just like that could be a job opportunity for a homeless person.
Right.
that they kind of, you know, whether it be the portable restroom or a homeless shelter, just they can kind of overlook that, and that can then become a part of their business. And then, of course, that offers opportunities for them to keep going. I feel like they're just stuck in this corner and, you know, taking away those portable restrooms and then not doing anything after that is where, yeah, you just have that disconnect.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of our future in general, is just not the initial act, but what we do after that act, that is, it becomes a domino effect. It's not just one thing, and those situations are there, like those restrooms were there, but now we have to see what opportunities we have afterward to actually make it a successful situation.
Just like we've been taught, the failures happen, the mistakes happen, but you learn from it, and that's how you keep going.
Yep.
So.
Really good. And this is why I was asking about the future. And one of the things that I always wondered, so if you take homeless people and if they don't have any skills at all, you could teach them how to build their own house, you know, whether it's a three-unit home or to refurbish something. What you teach them the skills, and as they build this place, there's a very different sense of pride when you actually help to build your own home. And I would think that they would take care of it differently. And then that, it's not like you just help them to build their own home. They help to build homes for other homeless people.
Exactly.
It becomes more of a program. And now they have job skills, so that becomes an apprenticeship that gives them job skills to work on home builders or other construction sites just in general. So now they have a marketable skill.
Right.
And a place to live.
Exactly. And it's just one thing can add to the next. And I don't know, I think there's a lot of people that don't look at it in that perspective.
Yeah, if we give it that little extra step, that time that it needs to be like a successful idea, you just that extra step of, okay, I'm not going to build it for them, I'm going to build it with them, and we're going to educate each other and work collectively to make it happen.
You said some really good things. So the other thing that I think was pretty amazing that you said is, don't build a building that's just going to be there for 100 years and you tear it down. So the Empire State Building, I don't know, what was that, the 1930s, I think it was built. So it's coming up on 100 years, and I always wonder what will they do about it. It's a landmark, so, how long will it last? You're saying, I thought of the pyramids in Egypt or around the world that have been standing for thousands of years, and it sounds like that's what you're saying. Let's build buildings that last the test of time, not a few decades, but a few thousand years. Is that what I hear you saying?
Absolutely. Because, again, it reads back to that history that comes from them. So, of course, the pyramids, like, that is so much that you can learn from there. And they, had quite the structure with building those. So even if it's down to just the stud and the nail, but creating this structure that even if the skeleton stays, but they're able to recreate the facade or the interior, whatever it may be, I think it's extremely important to have that ground level of, sturdiness and be able to build off of that, even if the material around it deteriorates, not that I would want it to, but if that were to happen, at least there's still that skeleton that they can then, again, build off of, whether it reflects what the design used to be or it's just that same structural, setup to be able to do the same thing that way.
Right. So, and so if we were to look at that, one of the things that is part of being responsible, building a building is still a business. So whoever is investing in it, whoever is responsible for overseeing the construction of it, they have people to pay, they have materials to buy, and it needs to be profitable. Otherwise, it's very difficult, and there will be no incentive for investors to put their money in if they don't get something back. So to build a building that's going to withstand, centuries, people are looking for a return on their investment. Do you think Do you think that's a problem in the gap? You know, so does that mean we have to build new materials like a plastic that doesn't deteriorate, or it takes, you know, 500 years to erode, or what about the steel beams and, you know, them rusting and eroding? But that may be super expensive and very difficult for anyone to make a profit and to responsibly finish the project. So do you think that's one of the gaps that has to be bridged, or you as a younger generation, do you have just a completely different outlook on that?
I mean, I think the material is absolutely a huge part, but I think it's not only the material. Sadly, our society, the trends are always changing,
right.
But it does go down to thinking about the program within that building. It needs to speak to the community and the people that are going to be willing to invest in it. It needs to be important enough for people to feel passionate to also convey and help that be created. So not just, you know, making a strong building or a beautiful designed building, but also what's happening inside of it. The experience is so important. So whether it be the most amazing circulation of the way that you walk through that building, or it's the way that this program is impacting the people around it, I think that those kind of go hand in hand. So it's also, I guess, more of a conceptual thing rather than just the actual physical aspects to it. So I'd say that you also have to tap into the mentality behind the consumer and the people that would be experiencing it, or the people that would be paying for it, whatever it may be. I think all of those kind of, it's definitely a parallel there that kind of helps with the sustainability aspect.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of opportunities, especially for us coming out of school, to bridge that gap between the designer and the investor. Because I think that there are so many different things that we could actually do with materiality and with understanding the space and understanding the location. And that has so much to do with all of it. So kind of banding like our brains together and using a collective effort to understand how we can actually make the most successful and long-lasting space or structure with everyone together, I think can bridge that gap a little bit more, because there definitely is a little bit of a gap, and it's a lot to think about, because there's a lot that needs to be done to actually make that happen. I mean, there's the designer, there's the engineer, there's the person that's actually paying for the entire thing.
Yes.
So, well, the people now, but yeah, there's a gap, but it's definitely bridgeable. And I think that with a little bit of like a collective effort, it would definitely make that a lot easier.
While you're in school as students, have you been exposed to that? I mean, aren't the investors and the owners and the designers all already coming together, or they sort of operate in silos? And not being not underestimating or being condescending, but when I say silos, do you understand what I'm saying?
When you say what? I'm sorry.
The word silos. I'm asking, do all those stakeholders operate in silos, or are they?
I think that, like, in a firm situation, it is a collective effort, but I think that there are chains to the design process, and I think that those chains can become unlinked going down from piece to piece to piece, because I think that when you're a designer and you present, your piece to your client, that can kind of be a little bit lost in translation through the actual execution of it all. And I think that, I do understand what you're saying. I think that it's just, there are, in my opinion, with the way that things are now, there are still like a few little missing links that I feel like just those minute details, even how we were discussing before, like just to make sure that project actually becomes something more than what even initially was idealized.
And I think the aspect of us being in studio still, because Bianca and I have experienced totally different studio projects, but
mm-hmm.
also some of the same ones. But the little plus side of still being in college is that we actually have the opportunity to just create to whatever extent we want to. We have not yet been introduced to every single code imaginable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're not, you know, put it into boundaries with that. Budget hasn't been into play yet for us. Right now in my fourth year project, I do actually have a client. It's kind of touching upon everything we've been talking about, ironically, but it's an old coal mining site in Archbold, Pennsylvania, and has three buildings on the site. So this is going to be a year-long project. I'm close to the end of this halfway mark of the project, but right now we're working on the oil house, and basically we're going to reuse it to be a cafe or bike rental. It's right off the Lackawanna Heritage Trail, so kind of using our environment and, you know, using that to our advantage. But so we have two sides of it, two perspectives, I suppose. So we go to these borough meetings and we talk to the committee, and they talk about their budget and kind of the material that would make more sense for, because all of this is being funded by them and the community. It's all fundraised budget. It's nothing that people are donating. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting to be able to have that perspective, but even being in design school, they're kind of more focused on us being able to explore and learn how to design.
Right.
So definitely agree with everything you just said. And I do know that as we enter the real world of design, we're going to experience and see a lot more restrictions, but I would agree that every hand on the team goes into play. We actually took a couple of weeks in our studio to brand our studio and act as though we are a firm. And we did break off into teams, and each of us had to do a certain rendering for a certain idea and just this, that, and the other thing. So, yeah, I would definitely say that each of these go hand in hand in that the minute details, that's where it really comes into play. So, yeah, just the perspective that we're at right now, I think we haven't been hit with that totally, totally realistic side of things. But we've been given a little bit of it, if that makes sense.
Like the financial aspect, I feel like was kind of, it will be there soon through our education, but I feel like right now it's not questioned as much,
right.
Especially as much as you need it when you're actually in design and you're actually making it happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because when you start, when you talk about, we're going to build a building that, you know, stands for hundreds of years, not just 100. And, you know, our intent is that 1,000 years from now, in the year 3000, they are looking at this building that we helped design in the year 2025, for example. And it's still standing and it's been refurbished, but it's a solid building, and the intent from the very beginning was to have it stand this long. Now, an investor may say, that sounds nice, except, I won't be around, so I care less, my intent is to make some money. I'm going to drop, whatever $500 million into this project, and I expect to get back, my $500 million plus another $125 million. That's mm-hmm. it. And I'll look for my next project. So they may not care how long it stands.
Right.
So that may be something, that may be a paradigm shift in the whole construction and design world. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think that because our generation has such a drive for the environmental aspect of things, it's definitely going to be on our shoulders to figure out how to make it both appealing to the investor and appealing to the sustainable aspects of everything. Because when we have that drive and we want to push forward with that, we can't always advertise it as that's our biggest thing. Although in our hearts, that's our biggest thing, and that's what's driving a lot of our design decisions. We also have to make sure that, those decisions are appealing to everybody, and especially appealing to the crowd that, like our customer and our clients, for sure.
Right.
100% agree.
Right. There's an economic impact. Even saying, where are the materials? Are they from overseas?
Right.
Can we get it from here? And the investor may say, that's nice. You can get it from the same town or the next town over.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to save me several million dollars to get it from China or Indonesia or somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it needs to be. You stay true to what you're passionate about.
Right.
I think that in life you're going to come across people that are ready to go with your passions and, get on that train with you. And not to say that there's this huge disconnect between generations, because I've definitely spoken to people older than us that we're totally on the same page with keeping these things important and, you know, admirable. So I would definitely say that, yeah, you definitely have to appeal to that client and, you know, convince them as to why this is important. But I think if after try and try again, they end up, you know, giving up on it, I think you have to just, that's me personally. That's not, right. You know, everybody, but I feel like I would be happier at the end of the day, you know, keeping it local and sustainable rather than saying, you know what? Yeah, I want your money. Let's go to China and get all that material. Because at the end of the day, I'd still want my building to convey the intent that I had originally gone for. So yeah, I think that then kind of falls back to that huge decision of what path you want to go to, because that would just be a fork in the road moment. But I think that personally, and I feel like you'd agree that just like staying true to who you are and I guess that branding aspect as we move forward with whether we do have our own businesses or not, but keeping true to our hopes and desires.
Yeah. And I think when you stay true to that, you figure out a way to make it work. Like I feel like there's always going to be complications in that area. And I think that when you take that puzzle and you dive in and you really figure it out, like, so that with the budgeting that we had vaguely discussed before, you know, you can maybe even have that as your selling point that, you know, this is not going to give you any problems within the next few years with this design because we're using more successful materials. Or you could comprehend that for that client or for that investor, you know, their budget is the most important. So make sure that your budget can align with that as well as decisions that you're making. And I think that in the future, it's going to get a little bit easier for us too, because I think the demand is going up.
Yeah.
We just have to continually make that demand stay
and push for it.
Right.
Right. And I would add one thing, you know, when we were talking about, you know, New York City putting bathrooms on the street and they were being used improperly, that's a sign of our culture, right? So,
right.
So perhaps the culture of the nation is transforming, which means the investors would transform with the culture,
right, yes.
Is what I'm getting at. So we have just a couple of minutes left. Wow, very few. This has been a great conversation. So I guess each of you, if you could in 45 seconds, what would you like to say to the current generation and your future investors that supports the architecture and design of the future?
Stay creative, stay imaginative, keep fighting for what you truly believe in, because at the end of the day, you're going to find supporters and people that fight for you and fight with you. So don't give up. I know it's really cheesy, but stay curious and keep designing the way that you feel is important. And if you think certain topics matter, then they do. And keep true to that.
Yeah, I definitely think that keeping an open mind and staying true to who you are, of course, and just, you know, never stop educating yourself ever. Because that, I think, I mean, we have the opportunity to have this education directly in our faces right now. But with age, I feel like that's just there's even more opportunity to keep searching and to keep understanding new perspectives of everything, whether the way that you know works or not. You know, there's never any end to education ever.
Yeah. We will always be students. Even after we graduate, we're always going to be students. And to just remember to keep yourself in a good perspective, put yourself in someone else's shoes, and then maybe you'll understand where they're coming from. So, yeah, definitely, you're not ever going to stop being a student. Yeah.
Perfect.
Well
I can only say thank you, ladies.
Thank you guys so much for having us. We've been so excited about this.
Such an amazing experience. And it was great to talk to both of you.
Yeah, it has been wonderful.
Oh, my God. You're so awesome. And cheers. I keep saying it wrong. I keep saying Marymount, Marywood.
Yes,
Marywood, you got it.
Yes, cheers to Marywood University for having you as amazing students and amazing human beings. So awesome. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak with us and stay in touch with us, please.
Yeah,
we will. Thank
absolutely.
You both.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Have a good night. And
thank
happy
you.
Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, Yes, but, happy holidays, happy Thanksgiving, and take care. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.